Thank you, Malcolm, and thanks to you and Josh for scheduling this presentation. I'm glad everyone's here to see it. What I'd like to bring up, I mean, the talks have been really great. I've been making notes to really cross-correlate what everybody's talking about. For our work, we are interested in speech signals, the raw data being from a sensor related to speech, specifically the microphone, the audio signal sampled at a given rate, using a parametric model called a source filter model. It's been around for a while, and what we're extending that to do is do joint source filter modeling using wavelets, which we term flexible basis functions. This is work with Dan Rudoy and Patrick Wolf at Harvard. So where we fit in this session is we've seen that the representations of speech can come in various domains, and letting the machine learn from the raw data we just looked at, and including cortical and auditory-like representations, that would be very appropriate for perceptual-based performance. However, we're slightly focused on the opposite side, or production-based models, and I'll tell you where the motivation comes from the clinic. And along the lines of what the model is, we then look at how we characterize and parameterize it, which subspace do we lie in. Paris will talk about another subspace representation. I won't go into these higher level ways, and I should have put Dick up with the auditory-like representations, but what Josh talked about in terms of summary statistics, that is relevant, actually, because we use kind of a noise model, which is a good segue into what the model is for speech. And LPC coefficients, how they were developed, is using a model where there's a stochastic input, such as white Gaussian noise, or here this W function, that being input into a linear filter to give the resonances of the vocal tract, and we'll restrict it at the moment to all pole speech. But in reality, there's a mismatch between that model and the sources that we see in speech. And on the production side are both deterministic and stochastic. If we just had the stochastic component, then this is what you would kind of hear. So the whispered speech model is appropriate for certain speech, but if we want to analyze voiced and unvoiced speech, then we need to add another term and understand how to estimate this second term, which we term mu of n. Sorry, is it a little bit low?
Yeah.
So everything's the same except this added parameter, which will fit to that deterministic, non-stochastic component, which comes from the glottal pulses that may be periodic, don't have to be periodic. And how we estimate these is a question. In which subspace does this representation of the voiced part of speech lie? I'll preempt Abir's question by saying that we're assuming clean speech. and in some cases, my research, my PhD research was at Massachusetts General Hospital, and at a voice clinic, we're able to get clean environments, clean speech in a very stable environment, in a sound booth, to analyze and compare features directly to vocal characteristics. So that's kind of is a limitation in real environments. So this is not new in terms of just, I'm just including that other parameter. That's not new. This ARX, or exogenous input into the AR model, has been looked at given parametric models such as the LF model, which is a parameterization of the glottal flow derivative, the airflow pulse, in addition to linear models. But both of these do require a good knowledge of when the source, or when our impulses happen, when the vocal folds open and close. So what we are proposing, we're proposing, is to extend that model and find a subspace that is not limited or restricted to needing these time-based estimates. So our solution, which we presented, our group presented last year at ICASP, was using wavelets, or these G functions, G events, so having a bunch of basis functions with weighting coefficients beta, simply summing those to equal this non-stochastic voicing component. And this is robust to variations in fundamental frequency or pitch glides, irregular pitch periods in certain disordered voices that we see in the clinic. And for wavelets being time localized allows us to shift the basis and time and frequency without knowing a priori some of the source properties. So I alluded to this in the beginning. Why do we care about this? And the data in which I deal with are typically from clinical applications, and voice assessment informs speech therapists and surgeons who do their work on the vocal folds and want to see from the production side how a certain technique will affect a feature. In addition, there are characteristics that are important to look at, both health, emotional state, and speaker ID, etc. So how do we do this subspace selection? I'll just put one set of equations here. All I'm showing you here is the least square solution to the problem I showed before. In the LPC case, the AR autoregressive only case, this boils down to the classic model where you get LPC coefficients. What we have extra is this G matrix, which holds the subspace of the wavelets, which will model the voicing component. Sigma is the Gaussian noise variance. So why I wanted to show you this is the critical issue by simply estimating the wavelet basis on all the samples. Let's say you have 256 samples of the raw speech waveform. If we want to estimate 256 basis functions and parameterize the signal that way, it turns into an ill-conditioned problem because of the inversion that we see here. And that that conditioning problem we address in this paper by thresholding the wavelet, so we don't take all the wavelet functions in this basis. So we propose three wavelet shrinkage algorithms, which are simply, we don't need all 256 wavelets. How many do we need? 32, 56, 60. And that thresholding can be specified using iterative methods, by hard thresholding of wavelet coefficients, soft thresholding, in addition to joint estimation of the parameters, if we want to use a top N set of wavelet coefficients. And finally, we present another optimization technique using an L1 norm as criterion. So I'm not going into the details here because that I want to give you an intuition of what some of the performance issues are, as well as the results. And the paper goes into detail about the algorithms themselves. So what do we get? Well, what I'm showing here is unsynthesized speech. I'll also show you a real example. Is when we synthesize with a given source, we know the pitch. We can time vary the pitch and see its effect on various algorithms. The first algorithm is using the hard thresholding iterative approach. Hard 64 is a top 64 wavelets. Is kind of a second step after hard thresholding. And finally, what I want you to first focus on is the last output, which is the residual, the AR residual. And that's giving the source waveform that we can parameterize and find speed voicing properties from that. It is now, it includes both components of stochastic and non-stochastic parts. So what our algorithm does is separate those in a principled manner to begin with. And you can also do separation. You can do deterministic, stochastic separation on the AR residual, but we do this as part of the model. And we get a better root mean square error almost because of that, but the source property estimation is better, and the filter property estimation is better. So the classic case is when you have a filter with a given formant values. If you just use the AR model, there's a bias in the formant frequency, which I'm showing in the last curve, the bottom curve, the AR residual and the LPC coefficients. When you look at the spectrum, there's a bias in F2 and F3 relative to the ground truth. And our algorithm handles that by putting the appropriate energy in the source and the filter, in a way doing the separation problem, or inverse filtering problem. The paper also goes into one theoretical observation where we find and derive the Kramer-Rao lower bounds, which are the lower bounds of this estimator of its variance. So if we have the three parameters, in this toy example, we took a filter with one pole, a two-pole filter, one resonance, and that resonance is at 2 kilohertz. So we have a 2 kilohertz one resonance function, and we swept the source sinusoids. We have an input source that was swept over frequency, and what you're seeing is from 0 to 8 kilohertz. And the estimators for the LPC coefficients, A1, A2, and the beta coefficient for the sinusoid, is giving us the variance. And what we see is, as expected, is that we are able to estimate the filter pretty well across the bandwidth, except the source is unable to be, the property is unable to be estimated when they overlap that center frequency. So this is the classic problem when we're sampling the spectrum at the center frequency. So when the sinusoid lines up with the resonance, we get an increase in the lower bound of that estimator. So this is what I was talking about in this example, and we can also show it for the bandwidths in terms of the best that we can do is if the bandwidths are pretty, when we sweep the bandwidth of the resonance of the filter, fix the resonance of the filter and sweep the bandwidth, fix the frequency of the sinusoid at 2 kilohertz and vary the bandwidth, we show that the estimator variance gets, as expected, gets better as the bandwidth gets smaller, so that the filter and the source are easier to discriminate. But all this is showing is that the problem gets more and more difficult when F0, or the fundamental frequency of the source, crosses F1, for example, in real speech. So that gives you a high-level overview of what we're doing. And the last thoughts are using, on the technical side, doing better thresholding, maybe level-dependent thresholding, and not just hard thresholding, and other ways of penalizing the wavelet coefficients to get a better representation of that source. Here's an example of the of natural speech where we show the waveform with a glottalized voice quality that sounds like an ah instead of a periodic source. And we're able to be sensitive to that because finding the exact pulse times is difficult when things are aperiodic. So wavelets not really caring about what the period is can grab those impulses, and then we can find features from the reconstructed source. Finally, I wanted to, I'm sorry this is low, give you an example of one of the clinical applications. There's some advances in high-speed video endoscopy of the larynx, and I get to work with these with these video all day and relate these to the source features that we estimate theoretically on synthesized vowels and on real vowels, but also look at put things down the throat or estimate airflow, and this is kind of our next step to look at, well, do these features actually relate to what we can measure in human subjects. As you can see, this is not the easiest setup to collect airflow in addition to endoscopic views of the larynx. So that is that's what I had, and I welcome questions.
Thank you.
Well, I can also repeat the question, but the microphone may be coming.
Yeah, thank you for your talk. My question relates to what is the main difference of your approach compared to what is done for kelp coding, where you also have LPC and a sum of wavelets or a sum of dictionary atoms to build the source. And so if you can comment on that, the main difference between
sure.
coding.
In code-excited linear prediction, you have kind of a dictionary of I'll go back to the... a dictionary of sources that you can use to encode that aspect. And that's not limited to... simply noise. So in kelp, it's similar. What we're doing is then parametrizing that code book, or each one of the entries in the code book, to then find features that relate to the source, instead of just the raw source. In kelp, you have kind of the raw samples. And then you resynthesize and your cell phone processor, and it sounds natural. So the output in that is kind of a natural-sounding resynthesis, where we're interested in, once we get the parameters, is then deriving features from those parameters. But thanks, that's a good point.
Thank you.
I want to ask you a beer question. It sounds like this would do better for noise than regular LPC, wouldn't it?
Depends on the noise, I guess.
So when would it do better and when would it do worse?
So my master's thesis actually found that we can actually extend this model one step further, because the noise can... in voice speech has been observed to be modulated. So it's not actually white Gaussian noise, but it can be modulated white Gaussian noise. So even this model is, but it's always the trade-off between how, you know, do we care about modulations and noise or not. Where it may not perform as well is, this is putting the noise function before the filter given a speech model. If it's reverberation noise, if it's a car going past, that's not filtered by the same transfer function. So there is a larger model mismatch there. But that's good question.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.